Welcome to the DD&D podcast, Demented Dungeons and Dragons, where we talk about everything except for, well, including Dungeons and Dragons. My co-host barely has a voice, so he's looking at me like, yeah, keep talking. All right, he'll play the disclaimer for you here in a little bit, but first we're changing locations. We're at the wonderful DD&D Farm and Retreat, where I've been retreating now for over a year. Yeah, I think I've been retreating here for over a year. Interesting. Our lamb star is not blinking. Oh, it is blinking, just barely. All right, apparently we're at an angle where we couldn't see it blinking there for a second, which is weird. By Landstar, it's a cell phone tower that's, within a quarter mile of our lamp. Adjacent to, sort of. It's on the other side of the street. Anyway, I was going to read to you, but I don't have the book up yet. And when we get down here to the camp, I'm going to switch to another charger so that I have my studio and Kano has his if he decides to speak.
Rough, rough.
Rough, rough. Oh, yeah, I forgot to put the goats away. Yeah, I have to wait until after the podcast. All righty. So I'm thinking, if I'm going to read, I'm going to read from this book that Kano asked me to get a hold of called The Biology of Belief. And at the end of the book, the author recommends a process called Psy-K. It's spelled psych with a hyphen and a K on that. But they don't pronounce the in the psych. So I've been researching that. And it's, I don't know, it strikes me as another Dianetics. So. But the book's pretty much right on. Looks pretty good. All right, so I've got 22% charge. I'm going to grab my chip and the sour cream.
Dungeons and Dragons disclaimer. Asterisk legal notice asterisk. This podcast is for educational and / for entertainment purposes only. Our opinions and religious beliefs are our own. Most of this is all hearsay evidence and is not admissible in court. Our first-hand knowledge is your hearsay evidence and you should always go and do your own homework. We are not necessarily encouraging you to overthrow any terroristic tyrannical de facto governments, medical establishments, fast food franchises, any religious or non-religious 501c3s or anything of that matter. We do encourage you not to feed the beast. We do encourage you to love your neighbor, your community, and your homeland. We do encourage you to do what is right, when it is right, because it is right. We do encourage you to protect your de jure government, your sovereignty, your freedoms, and your liberty, and those same freedoms and liberties for your neighbor, your community, your people, and your homeland. The Lord gave you free will. Please use it wisely. Pray it forward. Pray for others as you would like them to pray for you. Love others as you would want them to love you. Please read 1 Corinthians 13. We practice God's medicine, not man's medicines. Any nutritional statements heard on this podcast is just our research and / or experience. Most of them may not be accepted by the FDA. Under the New World Order rules, regulations, standards, codes, and guidelines, we are not allowed to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any diseases. But we cannot cure you, nor can your doctor, only you can heal yourself. Disease is a result of a nutritional deficient environment. Feed your body right, and your body will cure itself. Man and / or other animals. We are not man animals. This podcast is not made for animals. This podcast is only for certain humans made in God's image, endowed by God with certain inalienable rights. If you are an animal, this podcast isn't necessarily for you. Please tell your human about us.
Yeah, tell your human. Define man animal. Yeah, man or other animals. I don't know, my reading of scripture, I'm not an animal. So to make laws and regulations based on being a man or another animal means that law or regulation doesn't apply to me. Because I'm a man made in God's image. As I'm sure you are too, but, you know, that's for your religious conviction to figure out and determine. And you come in a courtroom and they say, oh, you don't, obviously they're talking about you because you're a man. It's like, well, but you said man or other animals. So you're talking about men who are animals. That goes against my religious beliefs. Are you saying I can't practice my religious beliefs? I don't have freedom of religion? Whoa, I heard a ding. I think Kano popped in. Let's hear him squeak his voice.
Yeah,
he's there. Okay, that's probably as much speaking as he's going to do tonight. Maybe a little bit more.
Maybe. Squirrel had babies.
Yeah, Squirrel has babies, and I'm not sure where they were because they were on the floor, on the ground earlier today. So, but I don't have enough charge to look around to find out where they at. So, hopefully they survived the night. Maybe she put them back where they belong. I don't know. It is your first litter, after all.
She was doing good, though, earlier.
All righty. Well, I should probably look for this book that I was talking about earlier called The Biology of Belief. And I'm thinking maybe I should start with the epilogue, the end of the book. But that won't explain how he came to that point. But, well, all right, fine. I'll try at the beginning of the book. I doubt I'll read the whole thing. I know I won't do it tonight. Let's see now. Looking.
I think the babies are under the lawnmower.
That makes sense. Considering that two of them must have fallen out. Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
No, they're not there.
You can stand on that stool and look up in their little cubbyhole. They were up in the cubbyhole before. You can see if she put them back. She might have.
Yep, she put them back.
Holy smokes, that's a lot of work, but there should be four of them.
Yep.
Two oranges, one Cali, and... Yeah. Okay, reference.
Squirrel's a good mommy.
There we go. Ruth Lipton, The Biology of Belief. Oh, interesting. Well, I don't want to open it up with, I see this program will read it. Okay. Let's see now.
I brought some paper down.
Some paper down? Well, you brought down some paper. Okay, I'm skipping title page and dedication and table of contents. Apparently, I just lost my co-host. That's, you know, and then there's end notes. That's weird. How did I get all the way to the end of the book already? Oh, crap. I don't want to be a demon. How'd that happen? Prologue. All right. Oh, he's back. Okay, prologue. If you could be anybody, who would you be?
Me.
I used to spend an inordinate amount of time pondering that question. I was obsessed with the fantasy of changing my identity because I wanted to be anybody but me. I had a good career as a cell biologist and medical school professor, but that didn't make up for the fact that my personal life was, at best, a shambles. The harder I tried to find happiness and satisfaction in my personal life, the more dissatisfied and unhappy I became. In my reflective moments, I resolved to surrender to my unhappy life. I decided that fate had dealt me a bad hand, and I should simply accept it. Que sera, sera. In the fall of 1985, my depressed, fatalistic attitude changed in one transformational moment. I had resigned my tenured position at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and was teaching at an off-school medical college in the Caribbean. Because the school was so far from the academic mainstream, I had the opportunity to think outside the rigid perimeters of belief that prevailed in conventional academia. Hold on, seeing if I can scroll.
Academia?
Academia. Okay. Darn it. Okay. I'm trying to. Okay. Far from the ivory towers, isolated on an emerald island in the deep azure Caribbean Sea, I experienced a scientific epiphany. Oh, that. Okay, there we go. I don't know how to navigate this program. That's the problem. That shattered my beliefs in the nature of life. My life-changing moment occurred while I was reviewing my research on the mechanisms by which cells control their physiology and behavior. Suddenly, I realized that a cell's life is controlled by the physical and energetic environment and not by its genes. Gee whiz, and yeah, who's controlled by a blueprint?
You know, diarrhea is hereditary.
Yeah, it runs in the genes. Alrighty. Now I can't see. Alright, hold on. I've got it turned down.
the brightness of this night.
Okay.
Where was I?
My life-changing moment occurred while I was reviewing my research on the mechanisms by which cells control their physiology and behavior. Suddenly, I realized that a cell's life is controlled by the physical and energetic environment and not by its genes. Genes are simply molecular blueprints used in the construction of cells, tissues, and organs. The environment serves as a contractor who reads and engages those genetic blueprints and is ultimately responsible for the character of the cell's life. It is a single cell's awareness of the environment, not the genes, that sets into motion the mechanisms of life. As a cell biologist, I knew that my insights had powerful ramifications for my own life and the lives of all human beings. I was acutely aware that each of us is made up of approximately 50 trillion single cells. I had devoted my professional life to better understanding single cells because I knew then and know now that the better we understand single cells, the better we can understand the community of cells that comprises each human body, and that if single cells are controlled by their awareness of the environment, so too are we trillion-celled human beings, just like a single cell, the character of our lives is determined not by our genes, but by our responses to the environmental signals that propel life. On the one hand, my new understanding of the nature of life was a jolt. For close to two decades, I had been programming biology's central dogma, the belief that life is controlled by genes, into the minds of medical students. On the other hand, my new understanding was not a complete surprise. I had always had a niggling doubts about the genetic determinism. Some of those doubts stem from my 18 years of government-funded research on cloning stem cells. Though it took a sojourn outside of traditional academia for me to fully realize it, my research offered incontrovertible proof that biology's most cherished tenet regarding genetic determinism are fundamentally flawed. My new understanding of the nature of life not only corroborated my stem cell research, but also, I realized, contradicted another belief of mainstream science that I, hello co-host, had been propounding to my students. The belief that allopathic medicine is the only kind of medicine that merits consideration in medical school. By finally giving the energy-based environment its due, it provided for a grand convergence uniting the science and practice of allopathic medicine. Okay. What? Okay.
complementary medicine, and the spiritual wisdom of the ancient and modern faith. On a personal level, I knew at the moment of insight that I'd gotten myself stuck simply by believing that I was fated to have a spectacularly unsuccessful personal life. There is no doubt that human beings have a great capacity. Have a great capacity for sticking to false beliefs with great passion and tenacity. And hyper-rational scientists are not immune. Our well-developed nervous system, headed by our big brain, is testament that our awareness is far more complicated than that of a single cell. When our uniquely human mind gets involved, we can choose to perceive the environment in different ways, unlike a single cell whose awareness is more reflexive. I was exhilarated by the new realization that I could change the character of my life by changing my beliefs. I was instantly energized because I realized that there was a science-based perennial victim to my new position as co-creator of my destiny. I'm not sure I read that right, but anyway. It has been more than 20 years since that magical night in the Caribbean. Throughout the intervening years, biological research has continued to corroborate the knowledge I gained on that early morning. Today, two newly evolved fields of science representing the most important areas of biomedical research substantiate the conclusion offered in the biology of belief. First, the science of signal transduction focuses upon the biomedical pathways by which cells respond to environmental cues. Environmental signals engage cytoplasmic processes that can alter gene expression and thereby control cell fate, influencing cell movement. Sorry, I need more oxygen. Control cell survival, or even sentence a cell to death. Signal transduction science recognizes that the fate and behavior of an organism is directly linked to its perception of the environment. In simple terms, the character of our life is based upon how we perceive it. Second, the new science of epigenetics, which literally means control above the genes, has completely upended our conventional understanding of genetic control. Epigenetics is modifying and regulate gene activities. The new awareness reveals that our genes are constantly being remodeled in response to life experiences, which again emphasizes that our perception of life shapes our biology. Months after the book was first published, an article in one of the most prestigious journals, Nature, revealed exciting new epigenetic insights on how the environment controls genes, controls gene activity in stem cells, which consequently is the same subject and conclusion I offered in Chapter 2. I must admit that I was amused by the fact that my chapter was entitled it's the environment, stupid, while the more recent Nature article was entitled, it's the ecology, stupid. Okay, that was 2005 Nature, 435:268. I'm not sure exactly what those abbreviations stand for, but I think that'll get you to the page and the chapter and the volume of the Nature magazine that had the article you quoted. Essentially, we are on the same page. Some scientists, in reviewing the book, ask, so what's new about this work? Leading-edge scientists are familiar with the concept proposed herein, and that's good news. The problem is related to the fact that over 99% of the rest of the population, the lay audience, is still operating from the antiquated and disempowering beliefs about being victims of their genes. While research scientists might be familiar with the new and truly radical shift in awareness, these insights have yet to trickle down to the general public. The media worsens the situation by misleading the public with a never-ending onslaught of stories presumably identifying a gene that controls this cancer or that malady. Consequently, the intention behind this book is to translate the significance of this leading-edge science so that it is acceptable to the lay audience. It is my sincerest hope that you will recognize that many of the beliefs propelling your life are false and self-limiting, and you will be inspired to change those beliefs. Understanding in a scientific level how cells respond to your thoughts and perceptions illuminates the path to personal empowerment. The insights we gain through this new biology unleash the power of consciousness, matter, and miracles. The biology of belief.
What animal is that?
What animal is what?
That might be a raccoon.
No. Might be. Tana was hearing strange animals. And I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it might be a raccoon. Raccoons strangely sound like little chittering birds when they're traveling together. You can tell. It sounds like chittering birds in the middle of the night and a lot of rummaging. They're turning things over constantly. Anyway, the biology of belief is not a self-help book. It is a self-empowerment book. The information offers knowledge of self, and from that knowledge comes the power to control your life. The information is powerful. I know it is. The life I have created using this awareness is so much richer and satisfying that I no longer ask myself, if I could be anybody, who would I be? For now, the answer is a no-brainer. I want to be me. Yay!
For the retarded kid.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. The next thing is the introduction. What was that I just read? That was the, I believe, the preface. No, the prologue. Okay, the prologue. Okay, is your voice good enough to talk now, or?
Not really, but I can talk a little.
Well, let's see how much more. We got 30 minutes to fill out an hour. So,
well, let's do Ron Paul real quick.
Okay, we can do Ron Paul. And I'm going to drink some water while you do that. Oh, I'm out of water.
I haven't been on the game lately because I got to do another update. and I don't have enough room in my phone.
I always delete stuff to achieve that.
Yeah, well, I already did that, so now I gotta do it again.
Yeah, I hear you. So I'm not gonna be able to play for a minute because I haven't updated.
Probably. Here we go.
Hello?
He's wrong. The more recent clashes between the alt-right and the group Antifa, some libertarians have debated which group they should support. The answer is simple, neither. The alt-right
neither.
And its leftist opponents are two sides of the same authoritarian coin. The alt-right elevates racial identity over individual identity. The obsession with race leads them to support massive government interference in the economy in order to benefit members of the favored race. They also favor massive welfare and entitlement spending as long as it functions as a racial spoil system. Some prominent alt-right leaders even support abortion as a way of limiting the minority population. No one who sincerely supports individual liberty, property rights, or the right of life can have any sympathy for this type of racial collectivism. Antifa, like all Marxists, elevates class identity over individual identity. Antifa supporters believe government must run the economy because otherwise workers will be exploited by greedy capitalists. This faith in central economic planning ignores economic reality as well as the reality that in a free market, employers and workers voluntarily work together for their mutual benefit. It is only when government intervenes in the economy that crony capitalists have the opportunity to exploit workers, consumers, and taxpayers. Sadly, many on the left confuse the results of the mixed economy with free markets. Ironically, the failure of the Keynesian model of economic authoritarianism promoted by establishment economists like Paul Krugman is responsible for the rise of the alt-right and Antifa. Despite a recent upturn in some sectors of the economy, many Americans continue to struggle with unemployment and a Federal Reserve caused eroding standard of living. History shows that economic hardship causes many to follow demagogues offering easy solutions and convenient scapegoats. Left-wing demagogues scapegoat businesses and the 1%, ignoring the distinction between those who make their fortunes serving consumers and those who enrich themselves by manipulating the political process. Right-wing demagogues scapegoat immigrants and minorities, ignoring how these groups suffer under the current system and how they are disproportionately impacted by policies like the war on drugs and police militarization. As the Keynesian Krugman empire of big government and fiat currency collapses, more people will be attracted to authoritarianism, leading to an increase in violence. The only way to ensure the current system is not replaced with something even worse is for those of us who know the truth to work harder to spread the ideas of liberty. While we should be willing to form coalitions with individuals of goodwill across the political spectrum, we must never align with anyone promoting violence as a solution to social and economic problems. We must also oppose any attempts to use the violence committed by extremists as a justification for expanding the police state or infringing on free speech. Laws against hate speech set a dangerous precedent for censorship of speech unpopular with the ruling elite and the deep state. Libertarians have several advantages in the ideological battle over what we replace the Keynesian welfare model with. First, we do not need to resort to scapegoating and demagoguing as we have the truth about welfare, warfare, state, and the Federal Reserve on our side. We also offer a realistic way to restore prosperity. But our greatest advantage is that while authoritarianism divides people by race, class, religion, or other differences, the cause of liberty...
To repeat the announcement, press 1.
Press 1.
Repeat.
Hello, this is Ron Paul with your weekly update for Monday, August 21st. Following the recent clashes between the alt-right and the group Antifa, some libertarians have debated which group they should support. The answer is simple, neither. The alt-right and its leftist opponents are two sides of the same authoritarian coin. The alt-right elevates racial identity over individual identity. The obsession with race leads them to support massive government interference in the economy in order to benefit members of the favored race. They also favor massive welfare and entitlement spending as long as it functions as a racial spoil system. Some prominent alt-right leaders even support abortion as a way of limiting the minority population. No one who sincerely supports individual liberty, property rights, or the right of life can have any sympathy for this type of racial collectivism. Antifa, like all Marxists, elevates class identity over individual identity. Antifa supporters believe government must run the economy because otherwise workers will be exploited by greedy capitalists. This faith in central economic planning ignores economic reality as well as the reality that in a free market, employers and workers voluntarily work together for their mutual benefit. It is only when government intervenes in the economy that crony capitalists have the opportunity to exploit workers, consumers, and taxpayers. Sadly, many on the left confuse the results of the mixed economy with free markets. Ironically, the failure of the Keynesian model of economic authoritarianism promoted by establishment economists like Paul Krugman is responsible for the rise of the alt-right and Antifa. Despite a recent upturn in some sectors of the economy, many Americans continue to struggle with unemployment and a Federal Reserve caused eroding standard of living. History shows that economic hardship causes many to follow demagogues offering easy solutions and convenient scapegoats. Left-wing demagogues scapegoat businesses and the 1%, ignoring the distinction between those who make their fortunes serving consumers and those who enrich themselves by manipulating the political process. Right-wing demagogues scapegoat immigrants and minorities, ignoring how these groups suffer under the current system and how they are disproportionately impacted by policies like the war on drugs and police militarization. As the Keynesian Krugman empire of big government and fiat currency collapses, more people will be attracted to authoritarianism, leading to an increase in violence. The only way to ensure the current system is not replaced with something even worse is for those of us who know the truth to work harder to spread the ideas of liberty. While we should be willing to form coalitions with individuals of goodwill across the political spectrum, we must never align with anyone promoting violence as a solution to social and economic problems. We must also oppose any attempts to use the violence committed by extremists as a justification for expanding the police state or infringing on free speech. Laws against hate speech set a dangerous precedent for censorship of speech unpopular with the ruling elite and the deep state. Libertarians have several advantages in the ideological battle over what we replace the Keynesian welfare model with. First, we do not need to resort to scapegoating and demagoguing as we have the truth about welfare, warfare, state, and the Federal Reserve on our side. We also offer a realistic way to restore prosperity. But our greatest advantage is that while authoritarianism divides people by race, class, religion, or other differences, the cause of liberty.
To repeat the announcement, press 1. To repeat the announcement, press 1.
All right.
Well, that kind of fits with something that was pointed out in another podcast I was listening to. Yeah, basically, you got these two groups clashing. One's pro-white, one's pro-black. Both want... they want reparations for their people. It's like, well, yeah.
Well, basically, they're all one group. The two groups are working on basically the same thing. One, the increase in the size of Tusk's and the reason of power in government. Two, dividedness. United we stand, divided we fall. As long as we're divided with the people that want to control us have power over us.
Yep. And here's this one lady, her name's Chanel Helm. She wrote this article. Basically, she's telling white people to give up their stuff so that black people have a chance to catch up. And I don't know what delusion she was raised under, but clearly she thinks it's all white people's fault. You know, and it's like, well, it may have been white people, but only because the people in power happened to be white.
Wow. And the people, their own race sold them into slavery.
Well, but, yeah. Well, it was the better option than chopping their heads off, which was the usual practice.
True. Well, I don't know. Maybe chopping their head off might be better.
Well, anyway.
But, I mean, the Irish were slaves. You don't hear about that. You don't hear the Irish bitching about slaves.
Oh, I mean,
we were oppressed.
There were rich black people in early America before the Constitution was written who owned slaves, and some of them were white.
You don't hear about that either.
Like, you know, so, you know, she wants people to give up their property to, you know, to people who had generational poverty. I hate to break it to her, but if you give property to somebody, just give it to somebody who suffered generational poverty, they will lose it as quickly as they're given it.
Pretty close.
Right?
If they don't have the mentality to earn it, they don't have the mentality to keep it.
Pretty much.
And black people are not oppressed anymore. And, well, I take that back. Some of them are, but they oppress themselves. Just like certain white people oppress themselves. This country is not a country of that is divided by race anymore. Well, we're all the same race for that matter, but, you know, black people, white people, Mexicans, Chinese, Japanese, dirty knees, they all have equality. In fact, people of different ethnicities actually have an advantage over the white people because the white people are becoming the minority, and a lot of these companies can't hire a qualified white person because they have to hire an unqualified other person of another nationality because of quote unquote equality. But that's not equality because that person's not qualified. And that actually handicaps a lot of people and a lot of things. It handicaps the whole country when we say, oh, well, you're not qualified, but because you're a certain color, you get the job. Now, maybe
that's actually very insulting, too, because that's saying that because you're a certain color, you're incapable of qualifying. Now, let me guess, you're in the kitchen right now?
No, I had to go to the bathroom, so I'm heading to town.
Oh, okay. I'm going to get a jug of water. So I'm depositing another jug over here by the sink and getting a jug of water to drink. Okay. Anyway, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
if a person of color listens to this and thinks I'm being racist, you know, or we're being racist, consider the programs that the government has put into place to support people of color. It's like saying they don't have the intelligence or the capability of doing it themselves. You know, now I recognize there are some people out there who will not hire you because you're this color or that or this religion or that. Okay, that's fine. If you're a qualified person, somebody will hire you. And that person who hires the most qualified person, their business will thrive. Where the racist person who passed you up because your skin was the wrong shade of brown, guess what? Predator that just hired the most qualified person will outperform them. So you don't need government grants and stuff to support you. Don't
nope.
need handouts. Nobody needs a handout. You know, hands up, yes. Hands out, no. You know?
Yeah, if you think you need a handout, then you're oppressing yourself. No matter what color you are. We're all the same race.
Yep. You know,
I'm about 32 different colors.
Well, and I used to raise rats and mice, and it didn't matter what color the rat or the mouse was. If the female was ready to make babies, they made babies. They did not care, right? And took care of the children, all right? You know, rats and mice, they pair off, okay? So, and they don't care. Now,
just like
if on the other hand you're a chicken, two baby chicks can be born from the same mama. But if one of them's white and one of them's red, well, that white one will go gather with all the other white chickens, and the red one will go gather with all the other red chickens. And they'll all stay as far as they can away from the black chickens and the beige chickens and the green chickens. They won't get
except for the rooster. Except
and,
for the
well,
rooster.
Well, the rooster dance around from group to group. This is true. But if there's a white rooster and a bunch of white hens, the white hens tend to prefer the white rooster over the other rooster. So, you know, it's just, you know. So, I mean, I guess it depends on which animal you want to take your example from. You know, they're all chickens. They can all interbreed. And if push comes to shove, you know, it doesn't matter what color the chicken is, they'll get together and make more eggs and hatch more baby chicks. But,
well, yeah, that's just it. If we were different races, we wouldn't be able to interbreed.
Well, yeah. Yeah. When's the last time you've seen a dog crossed with a horse or a giraffe crossed with an elephant? You know, it just doesn't happen. You know, those are different races.
Yeah, so black people are the same race as white people.
You know? And if you don't believe it, then go find somebody of the what you consider to be the opposite color and go make some babies. But, oh, my gosh, just made babies. What race are they? Human.
Right.
You dipshit, they're human.
Exactly. We're all the same race.
All right.
Well, I don't know about you. I you may have evolved from monkeys, but I didn't. So there may be some monkeys among us, but other than that, most of us are humans.
Yeah, and then there's the reptilians among us as well. So
But then again, if we can cross with other humans who think they're monkeys, but we cannot cross with monkeys, then, well, what does that tell you? It means we did not evolve from apes.
Daddy, you said we were created in God's image. And Mommy told me that we're descendants of apes. Who am I supposed to believe? Well, son, it's fine. There's no confusion here. See, I was describing my side of the family. Your mother was describing hers.
Exactly. Yeah, I was telling you about my family tree. Your mother was telling you about hers.
Yeah.
Your mom is a monkey.
And she smells like one, too.
What does a monkey smell like?
All right, I'm going to let you monologue while I go in here and stink up the bathroom.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to monologue again? All right, so I'll probably read this article from... it's a horrible article, but I'm going to read it anyway. It's by Annelle Helm, and it's from the a paper called Leo Weekly. And I honestly think it's a travesty because she's basically asking for left and right. All right, so here it goes. White people, here are 10 requests from a Black Lives Matter leader. But Chanel Helm. This article is part of a package covering Louisville's reaction to Charlottesville. Check out our other pieces, including Rick Jones' column, Black People Should Arm Themselves Now, which actually they should have armed themselves long before now, anyway, and Erica Rucker's America, Where Are You Going? Okay. Some things I'm thinking about should change. In that Southern Black grandma voice, and then she lists it. So the grammar was off. I caught on why, because she did it in voice. Okay, one, white people. If you don't have any descendants, will your property to a Black or brown family, preferably one that lives in generational poverty? Two, white people. If you are inheriting property you intend to sell upon acceptance, give it to a Black or brown family. You're bound to make some money in some other white privileged way. Three, if you are a developer or realty owner of multifamily housing, build a sustainable complex in Black or brown blighted neighborhood and let Black and brown people live in it for free. Four, white people. If you can afford to downsize, give up the home you own to a Black or brown family, preferably a family of generational poverty. Five, white people. If any of the people you intend to leave your property to are racist assholes, change the will your property to Black and brown family, preferably one from generational poverty. Six, white people. Rebudget your monthly so you can donate to Black funds for land purchasing. Seven, white people, especially white women, because this is your specialty. Noisy Jenny and Meddling Kathy, get a racist fired. You know what the fuck they be saying. You be complicit when you ignore them. Get your boss fired because they racist too. Okay, eight. Backing up number seven.
this should be easy, but all those sheetless Klan Nazis and other little dick white men will be returning to work. Get they ass fired. Call the police even. They look suspicious. Okay. 9. Okay. Backing up, number 8. If any white person at your work or as you enter in spaces and you overhear a white person praising the actions from yesterday, first, get a pic, get their name, and more info. Hell, find out where they work. Get them fired, but certainly address them, and if you need to, you got hands, use them. 10. Commit to 2 things. Fight white supremacy where and how you can. This doesn't mean taking up knitting unless you are making scarves for black and brown kids in need and funding black and brown people and their work. Okay, and then it's hashtag run us out, run us our land, hashtag reparations, hashtag you gone learn today, hashtag run us our money. Okay, so this article apparently is in reaction to something that happened that I didn't hear about, and that's it may have been pretty major. I just don't watch the news. But apparently something happened in Charlottesville. Okay. So I should probably look into that. But I can understand that this woman may be angry or upset about whatever happened. But begging for handouts is not it, you know. And I don't know, if there's some white privileged way to make money, hell, if she comes up here and shows me how to do it and they're ethical, I'll give you 50% of the first year. So, you know, maybe you should call her up and tell her, hey, show me some of these white, what's the word she is? Some other white privileged way. You're bound to make that money in some other white privileged way. Yeah, okay. Kano, you're taking too long to take a poop. Okay. Very unprofessional. I'm crunching chips on the podcast. We have at least 2 minutes to go before I can hang up. I'd kind of prefer for Canada to have some chance of stepping in here and talking about some of this stuff. But anyway. Yeah, those two grips fighting with each other. They're just two sides of the same coin. They are purposely dividing us. Human against human. Brother against brother. And, you know, you can get involved in the fight. Or you can fight the fight by ignoring them and reaching out and helping your brother. And I don't care what color your brother is. Heck, I don't care what the eye color is, you know. And if you can identify different colors of souls, hey, I look forward to that. But I would point out that it takes a whole rainbow of color to make white light. And so
I'd kind of like to see a whole rainbow of colors around me. yeah, where's the Oompa Loompas? Where's the purples and the green people, you know? Anyway. It is now 9 o'clock. Central Standard Time? Daylight Time? I don't know where we're in. Anyway, it's 9 o'clock in the central area. And we've done our disclaimer and various other things. So, yeah. I guess I'm going to have to wait for Kano because I do not know the information to tell you how to call in now. So I'm going to ask him for a listener call-in info. And hopefully he responds. Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. He caught a cat of one of our mice, one of our cats, working hard on the farm. It caught a big, fat, juicy, it might be a rat. It's good size. Anyway. Dinner. Oh, my. Yeah, too bad I can't show you people these pictures. Some of the things I'm working on the farm. I got this one project. I call the tree Nemesis. All right? But to give an idea of the size of the thorns, I took a dollar bill and I stabbed it onto one of the thorns on this tree. And it gave a size reference. This tree is thorns from bottom to a good 30, 40 feet up. And, there's my co-host, I think. I heard noises. I heard a yelp. Does my co-host have information about how listeners can call in next week? I'm hearing lots of noises.
Tater hogs.
Tater hogs?
I'm surrounded by them.
Nah, there's no tater hogs around here. Tanner hogs and skinny dogs. I don't know what to call their male counterpart yet. Toothpick men. Tanner hogs and toothpick men.
Toothpicks, Tanner hogs.
Stick men and Tanner hogs. Yeah. Anyway, so how do the listeners call in next week, this program? Because I was going to close the show out because we've been on it for an hour, but I didn't know how to tell them how to call in next week.
Well, basically, they dial the same number we do, except we got that 3 or 4 digit extra extension.
Okay.
So basically,
So they call 515-604-9926, and then they enter the access code 128374.
Correct. And then the other extension after that is our admin extension.
Right. Which reminds me, I need to add one more comma to my auto dial.
Yeah, so if you want to auto dial it, put two commas between the phone number and the access number.
Well, between the star.
Not you.
I need another comma there.
They don't do the star.
They don't, but we do.
Right, I'm telling them.
Oh, yeah. Put two commas, and that'll give you a four-second pause, which will be just long enough that after when their phone automatically picks up, your access code will go in. Okay. Yeah,
right.
We got a little bit more we have to do.
So basically, that way you don't have to try to remember the number and the access code. You can program the number, then two commas, then the access code. And it'll auto-dial the phone number and the access code, and you're in.
Yep. Now, keep in mind, some phones don't use commas. They actually use the letter P for pause. And if your phone doesn't use a P or a comma, well, I can't help you directly, but I can tell you that there will be some way for you to insert some sort of pause into your phone dialing system. So you should be able to do it.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Anyway, so that's it for tonight, unless my co-host's voice is miraculously healed and he's ready to talk about something else. I suppose if he was nice, he could stop by. No, I don't have room for it. Never mind. I was going to ask him to get me a deal of ice cream, but I'm not that hungry. I shouldn't have eaten the sandwiches if I was going to do that.
Well, we could talk a little bit about Red Towers before we go.
Woo-hoo! Oh, yeah, let me see if I can update that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the wrong place.
Yeah, ever since I found out that they're going to reset the game here in about 1 month, I pretty much kind of quit playing.
Yeah, well, every time they do an update, though, I'm interested in following that. Because if their releases are closer and closer to the actual game, I want to know what can be done.
True. Well, I'll still play it, but right now I can't update it because I don't have room.
Oh, it still lets you play with the 3.1?
No, you can't play with the old version. It forces you to update.
You have to update. I noticed that when I updated last time, I updated before I found out, you know, before I opened the game. When I opened up the game, it told me I had to update. And so I just clicked the update thing, and then it went right back to the game again and let me play.
Weird.
Well, you know, I had already updated.
Right.
So. Yeah. Okay, so apparently I have enough room because it's going through and doing the update. It's only 19.5 megabytes.
Granted, on my bandwidth, I still haven't gotten 2 kilobytes yet. Or, I mean, 200 kilobytes. I've got just over a tenth of a megabyte. Woo-hoo. Yeah. Red Tower is E for everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's not really much to talk about right now.
So what's with that house that you were standing by before?
What?
There was a house you were standing by. You were pointing out the guy who had the special armor?
Oh, yeah.
You know what? That same guy is in there. In their screenshot for the game itself. I think he's standing in the exact same spot. I have a feeling he never moves. So he's not a player, he's an item.
I don't know, his username was Demo.
Okay, well, Demo's standing there with his special armor.
Well, we'll have to go back.
You'll have to attack Demo and see what happens.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's in one of the countries that's on the map.
Yep, I got 5% now. I've actually got 1.16 megabytes. Woohoo! Only 19.2 to go. Yay! All right, folks. Good night. And. Yeah. Hopefully the world will straighten itself out by the time we do our next podcast, and we'll be seeing the celebrations of the New World Order. But not the one that the government is trying to put in.
Do what?
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 Well, we'll sing the praises of the New World Order, but it won't be the one that the government is trying to put in. It'll be the surprise one put in by our Heavenly Father.
There you go.
Like, nope, I beat you to it. Ha ha.
Yeah, right.
Neener, neener, neener. Good night, folks. Call in next week. Need that number again?
Go to Dungeons and Dragons and find it.
Yeah, that too. Or you can call 515-604-9926 and wait until the nice little operator voice asks you for your access number, and it is 128374.
That means we're Sunday at 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time.
Yay!
Central Standard Time. So when do they change the clocks again?
I don't know.
So when they change the clocks to fall season, that's when we change our time to 7 instead of 8.
Yeah, because it'll be the same time.
Pretty much.
It'll still be the same time. It's just the clock will read differently. And I wish I could say, don't bother changing your clock. But unfortunately, my phone's programmed to follow whatever changes they put in. Because I tell you, my goats don't give a ding darn diddly what the clock says. All they know is that the sun's up or the sun's down. So,
speaking of which, they got to put them away.
Yeah, I got to go lock the gate and count them. Make sure they're all there, not over in the neighbor's field. Like they did to me once.
Yeah.
I heard Guy Heavy's howling, and I woke up and go, oh, shit, I forgot to close the goat's gate. And okay, there's no goats in the pen. And it's like, where are my goats? And then there they were, all bedded down right in the middle of Coyote Central.
Coyote Central.
Hey.
Here I am back at Cat Central.
Somebody's coming in on our campsite. I can hear their vehicle and see their headlights. And, oh, it's my co-host. All right.
It's the Alpha Cat.
Yay. All right, folks. Good night for the umpteenth time, I guess.
Bye.
Night.
I guess it's the recording and I can hang up now. That's weird.